Welcome to a special edition of the Baseball America podcast. This is a bonus podcast as Baseball America's Chris Klein is down in the Dominican Republic covering the Caribbean series. And in addition to posting numerous posts about the series on the Baseball America Prospects blog at baseballamerica.com/blog/prospects, he's also dropping off some interviews, some thoughts of his while he's down there, you know, heading around the country. And so today you're going to hear from Yankees linguist Ryan Anderson, who teaches English to Latin prospects at the team's academy down in the Dominican, as well as Pirates Director of International Scouting, Rene Gallo. And in addition to that, Chris Klein did go over to kind of tour around a couple of the different complexes and drops and gives us his thoughts on those. So, special podcast. We'll hopefully have a couple more of these before Chris comes back from the Caribbean, and hope you enjoy it.
Chris Klein of Baseball America here with Ron Anderson.
Hello, Chris.
The English teacher here at the Yankees Dominican complex. How long have you been here?
I got here in October of 2006.
Okay. And it's a year-round?
Yeah, it's a 10-month contract. It's
okay.
A special program that is sponsored and funded by the State Department and Georgetown University.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's an English language fellowship program. It's okay. For recent master's graduates in related fields of teaching English.
Okay. So basically, is it just teaching these guys basic English skills? Is it?
Yeah. Mainly I'm trying to get them up to conversational levels so they can, when they go to the States, they can make requests like restaurants and places like that. Some of them have pretty good skills already, so we're a lot of cultural stuff that I try to do with them.
Right.
If they've never been to the States before.
What is there, within the cultural stuff, so it goes beyond just English instruction?
Yeah. Special terminology in English language teaching called content-based instruction, where you're teaching content, but you're teaching it through the language of English, so your focus isn't necessarily on the, like, grammar, for example.
Right.
But, so you're teaching content, like cultural stuff, like ordering stuff in a restaurant, and what kind of restaurants you can expect in the States, and the various situations you're going to find. But I'm teaching them in English, so they're learning the language. And I teach grammar, too, of course. There's a lot of stuff.
Do you live here in the Dominican?
Yeah, I live right here. I stay at the campus 24/7, except for the time that the campus is closed, which was a couple months in December, a month and a half, December and middle of January. And then again from the end of the contract, which in my case is July, up until it started again in October.
So does the 11 o'clock curfew on weeknights apply to you as well?
No, but I never go out. It's still 11 o'clock at night. So I'm usually in bed by 9 o'clock.
What is it? Walk me through a typical day.
Okay, typically I'm up about 5, believe it or not, in the morning. And I jog for about an hour or so early in the morning when it's nice and cool. Finish that, eat breakfast, and I come back in and work on the lesson plans for the day.
Okay.
The specifics of it, anyway. Usually over the weekend, I spend at least a couple of hours doing a general overview of what I want to do in the upcoming week for each day. And then I'll get into the specifics of the lesson that morning and a little bit into the afternoon.
So it's a five-day a week, I'm sorry. It's a five-day?
Yeah, we're doing classes 5 days a week, 3 hours a day.
Okay.
We've got four different groups. They're getting about 4 hours of English a day.
Wow.
Plus, I'm here talking to them all the time in English. I try not to speak too much Spanish, and I don't know that much Spanish. So, and then the classes begin at 3:30 and run until 6:30 each day.
Okay, and so that's a full day.
Yeah, it's pretty full. Yeah, keeps me going.
is there a time of year that's busier than normal? I would think when the summer league's here, it's a little crazier than.
Actually, when the summer league is here, it's fine because the players that are here are going to be here for 3 or 4 months, and I can get a pretty much a set curriculum going with them. Right now, it's busy with people coming and going all the time. They're using students, and the students are coming in, new students and or players, and it can get pretty hectic. Like near the end of February, half the guys are going to be gone to Tampa.
Yeah.
Another group's coming in to replace them, and then near the end of March, that happens all over again. And so,
and doesn't that happen in July again with the? I mean, with several new players coming in after they, because that's when the
that's when they sign the right. contracts. I think last year there were only about 13 new ones came in, so there's not a huge turnover like it is now. It's not quite as disruptive or test my flexibility anyway.
Yeah. So is it? I mean, I imagine you taught in the States as well, is that?
No, I've never taught in the States.
Really?
I got my master's degree from the University of Montana in applied linguistics just recently. I've taught in South Korea for a few years. I was in Morocco in the same program for 1 year, and then I landed this job.
Wow.
Out of the blue.
That just shot my whole question, was how different was it to teach kids in the States and teach kids here? But you've been all over the place. Is it any different here? Is it?
Just visualize typical, whatever that might be, high school classroom. And these kids, these guys are mostly between the ages of 17 and 19 or 20.
Right.
So there's a lot of, like, high school age kids. For the most part, they're very pleasant, nice young men. No problems with them. There's always a few of them who aren't quite, shall we say, quite as motivated as others to learn English.
Right.
But that's true anywhere you're going to go.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so it's a fun job. I try to keep it fun with for them and for me. I don't want to bore them or myself.
Right.
And, I compared to a typical U.S. classroom, I would, not having taught there, I can't really be too sure about it, but I would say there's not much difference. Of course, there are the cultural differences, I suppose.
Right.
There's no girls here for them to,
yeah.
to date and all that, so that's totally different, of course. So, but yeah, I couldn't really give a definitive answer on that.
Again, Chris Klein here with Ron Anderson, English teacher here at the Dominican complex for the New York Yankees. So, what was it like when you got when you landed this job? So, you landed this job. How do you feel being a Yankee?
I've been a Yankee fan all my life since I was a kid, since 1950. I can pinpoint the exact date practically.
Wow.
1958.
Wow.
When the Yankees came back to beat the Milwaukee Braves, being down 3-1 in the World Series, they won three straight. And it's a story, family story, how my uncle was writing me about being a Yankee from the North and me living, having recently moved to Texas. So, and when the Yankees, and I didn't know anything about baseball, and the Yankees came back to win the series, I naturally identified with the Yankees since I'd been taking a ribbing from my uncle.
And it gave you a nice family, a little rivalry there.
Yeah, exactly. And I've loved them ever since. So this was like a dream come true. I'm like a kid in a candy store.
Yeah, he said when we were down at lunch, he said that was your dream job.
Yeah. I've always liked the Yankees. I've never, even through their leaner years in the late 60s and late 70s to the through the 80s and up to the 90s, I stuck by them.
80s were a tough time.
They were, yeah. They were a pretty tough time.
Sorry, I didn't mean to throw that in there.
No, that's okay.
Ron, thank you so much for your time. Yankee through and through. Appreciate it. Chris Klein, Baseball America, Ron Anderson.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Chris Klein here from Baseball America, down here in San Pedro de Macorís, Dominican Republic, with the Pirates International
Director
of Latin American Operations. Sorry, Rene. Rene Gallo.
Yeah.
And you were telling me an interesting story, kind of the history of the town on the way in.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you would want to share that with Baseball America.
Yeah. What happens is, you know, this town has produced a lot of Major League Baseball players, from Rico Cardi, Pedro Guerrero, Julio Franco, just many. And people wonder, well, why did so many come from this town? Well, in this town here, obviously, when we were coming in, you saw that they have a sugar refinery. And during the Spanish-American War, the Cubans sent some of their sugar workers here to San Pedro, and that's where they brought baseball. Because the English people were the ones that had the town, they had the sugar refinery at that time, and that's why you see names like George Bell, Mariano Duncan, because of the English. And they had cricket and would give it to the slaves. When the Cubans brought baseball, they took to baseball. And that's why this was really kind of the birthplace of baseball in the Dominican Republic.
A lot of people in the States are familiar the way scouting works, and it's completely different down here. I was wondering if you could just give maybe like a scouting 101 in the Dominican Republic or Venezuela, anywhere that you might go, that would differ. I mean, I know you were an area guy for a long time. What are the differences for you?
The biggest difference here is in that in the States, there's a lot of information available, credible information that you will get from, you know, college coaches, things of that nature. So most of the time what happens in the Dominican Republic, or rather in Latin America, is that it's different in the States. In the States, 90% of the time, money, bonus money paid to a player equals ability. It drops about 50% in Latin America. Just because a guy got a lot of money doesn't mean he's good. Just because he got a little money doesn't mean he's bad. And so anyway, what makes a guy get a lot of money here? Usually it's a guy that an American agent has gotten a hold of, and he starts, you know, sending faxes and things of that nature, and all of a sudden as a result of that, you get this high profile label on a guy. So when I come here, I'm trying to establish, is that high profile status merited, or am I going to get a comparable player for $20,000? And so that's the biggest deal. Now, there's times where that status is merited, but most of the time it's not. So you can get a comparable player for a lot less money. I'll give you an example in that, for instance, Guzman, the guy that originally signed with the Dodgers, got $2.2 million and has been basically an up-down AAA player. That same year, they gave Willie Ibar $1.6 million. And that same year, we were with Cleveland, we gave $18,000 to Johnny Peralta, $25,000 to Willie Taveras, and $10,000 to Hector Luna. So,
not a bad haul.
Not a bad haul.
The on the way in, I mean, just for me being like the total gringo, we're driving through a very poor area of town, and then a dirt road to get back here. Mm-hmm. I couldn't help but be a little caught off guard. I think I don't think I was prepared for what I was going to see and that kind of stuff. But I don't know where I was going with that. But there's so many guys coming out of this. There's so many guys that came out of this area.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a result of that. You know, because of the fact that. We were talking earlier. You were asking a question about the differences. Really, American kids, for the most part, see baseball or professional baseball, Major League Baseball, as entertainment. And so anyway, once they sign, they start seeing it as a profession. And a lot of them sometimes get uncomfortable with what's expected of them or the way things actually operate on a day-to-day basis. The biggest difference are kids here in this country, from the time they're very little, they understand that this is a profession. They understand that. You know, they think it's insane that, for instance, they ask me all the time, hey, how come Americans always want a guy's autograph? What do you do with it? See, when they see a major league player, they ask them, hey, well, how do you hold a bat? Or,
yeah.
Or they say, give me a ball so that they can go play. But they, you know, a guy here can stand here, they can have Vladimir Guerrero here, no one's going to ask him for his autograph. They think that's insane. They don't understand our fascination with a signature on a piece of paper. So they understand from a young age that this is a profession. They understand that. And they know, because of the situation they're in as far as poverty, that this is a way out. So that's, and honestly, really, that's why you see, and you have seen, so many of these players get to the big leagues and be good, which is another reason why we have to be careful with this modern phenomenon of the big bonus baby out of Latin America, because now you've given them what they wanted. So now, why do I got to go suffer and learn a language and a culture? Yeah, you're giving it to me right away. You know, so before they knew, it wasn't about the bonus, it's about the opportunity to be a big leaguer. And now all of a sudden my problems are over.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were talking earlier, you know, without mentioning any names and stuff, but you're going to have these guys coming out July 2nd, the whole thing, that show good tools in BP, or they'll throw a good bullpen and gets in games. It doesn't really carry over as much. But then, you know, somebody's going to take a chance and give a guy like that a big check.
Mm-hmm.
What are some things that you look for once the game starts?
Well, I mean, the ability to play. I mean, you know, baseball, in my opinion, scouting, it's always been, whether it be in America or here, there's a balance in this, in that, you know, you know, you're looking for tools. Tools are sacred, but they don't pay you. Tools get you to the big leagues, but in the big leagues, they don't pay you to have tools. They pay you to play baseball. So there has to be a balance between the guy's tools and his ability to play the game. I mean, if you're a really good player, but you have no tools, well, you end up being like a minor league player. You end up being a scout like me. Or if you have really great tools, but you can't play, well, those guys end up hanging around the minor leagues a long time, and then they end up in Mexico, and then they end up getting run out of there. So that's why, for me, it's always been imperative that I watch the guy in competition between the white lines to see how he's going to react, you know, to playing the game. And that's always carried a lot of weight with us and my scouting staff, and we've had success doing it that way. So, yeah, I mean, the game's a big, you know, I mean, I can see a guy in a workout. I, like, the last time that I saw this gentleman we're going to see today, I established, well, this is a guy I'd like to see in a game, but a lot is going to depend on how I watch him play the game.
Yeah. Chris Klein here with Rene Gaio, Director of Latin Operations for the Pittsburgh Pirates. You know, this is kind of the bread and butter of why you come down here, go to Venezuela, that kind of stuff, and Mexico. You know, going to Serie del Caribe beginning tomorrow, a lot of people around the game that are in your same position will take a pass on the series. Mm-hmm. What do you see the value in of going to Serie del Caribe?
Well, I mean, you know, one of it, you know, the things is it's really the like the premier baseball venue as far as you know, in the Caribbean, you know, and it's the game of baseball. It's people, you know, you get stars like Miguel Tejada is still playing, they're diving head first, and they make millions in the States, but it's the game, and they're also playing for their country and for pride. So that's one thing. And then, you know, just the visibility. Different countries come in, and people that are prominent in baseball from different countries, you know, it's good for us to see each other. Also, in the past, I don't do that with Pittsburgh, but I did coordinate the winter leagues with Cleveland, so we were able to acquire players that hadn't been signed yet in the Caribbean World Series. And it's something that, you know, that it's, I think it's important to be at, just, you know, for those things I mentioned, and you know, and we're going to watch him play, and you watch him play in some really intense competition. I remember David Ortiz just putting on the same shows that he's putting on now for Boston when he got let go by Minnesota, putting those same shows on the Caribbean World Series in Puerto Rico, and at that time didn't have a job, you know. So if you come down that way, you can still, you know, get a guy, you know, that's already a pro player, but you know, for whatever reason, you know, which is hard to believe now that David Ortiz was released. You know, yeah. And now he's like a premier offensive force in Major League Baseball. But it did happen, and if it happened in the past, it could happen again. So, you know, I'm going to try to be there and see if we can catch lightning in a bottle the next time, you know.
Rene Gaio, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate
it. Love it. Love Chris Klein. Love Baseball America.
Take care, Rene. So I'm standing here in Boca Chica, the Dominican Republic, just outside the capital of Santo Domingo. I came here on a press tour that was hosted by ESPN Deportes, and it's literally, I mean, the Yankees get accused of hiding players. I could see why it would be hard to find this complex that cost between $3 and $3.5 million to build. There's no sign off the main highway, which really isn't a highway, coming in. It says, no entre, privada. I'm working on my Spanish. And then you drive about a quarter of a mile, and then you can start to see the complex, and then you see the kind of the pearly gates with the New York Yankees symbol etched into the middle of it. The team has just kind of finished up their workouts for the day. Harold Garce is finishing up his bullpen, right-hander, signed in November. So I'm just standing here watching him throw. So we're here in again in Boca Chica. From here, I'll go and see a workout, like a grassroots workout of 14 and 15 year olds, which is about 30 minutes away, closer to La Romana. So Chris Klein, Baseball America, in the middle of a place where I kind of have no idea where I am. Hope things are well, and look forward to talking to you soon. Players here at the complex typically have to work here and stay here at the complex. The Yankees complex can house up to 80 players. They have 10 rooms with the capacity to fit 8 players in a room. Currently, they're about 60 to 61. I guess there's 61 players here in camp currently, but you know, down the stretch when you know the Dominican Summer League is in full force, that's when everything is pretty much booked up solid. So players have a curfew of 11 p.m. and they're allowed free time on Saturday nights, when they have to be back at the complex by Sunday at 5 p.m. So typically right now they're done by 12 or 1, and then they take English classes and go through different types of school. So